Call this meeting of Lincoln County Board of Commissioners to order. It's Wednesday, May 30th, it's 9:30 a.m., and we are in the Board of Commissioners Meeting Room 108 in the Lincoln County Courthouse. First item on the agenda is to establish a quorum. We have all three commissioners present. Next item is a proclamation, and this is a thank you from Polk County for assistance from Lincoln County Veteran Services Officer. And I believe we have some gentlemen and ladies. Commissioner Wheeler, I'll welcome you first. It's good to see you again.
Thank you.
And Brent, also good to see you. For the record, please identify yourselves.
I'm Jennifer Wheeler. I'm Polk County Commissioner.
And Brent Demo. I also work for Polk County as the Director of the Family and Community Outreach Department.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. We owe you two thank yous, one for allowing us to be here today, but the biggest thanks that we owe to you is for your loan of your veteran service officers to help us out when we were having a staffing issue. And you gentlemen know that we get to do a lot of really cool things when we're commissioners, but this, for me, has been the best, is when we established this veteran service office. It's been a godsend to all of the veterans in Polk County. And we had a little glitch, and we needed some help, and you were able to do that, and you reached out to us, and we really do appreciate it. And we wanted you to know that the two gentlemen that you sent to us did an outstanding job, and I'll let Brent speak to that because he's the one who supervises that department. But from the Board of Commissioners and from the whole county, we want to thank you for stepping up and helping us out, because it really meant a lot to us and to the veterans in our county. So with that, I'll let Brent.
Sure. Again, hey, it's Brent, and you've got Devin and Pete sitting out here, and you guys probably know this, they are top-notch veteran service officers. And for Commissioner Wheeler to be able to reach out to you guys, all you had to do is maybe send somebody for a day or so, help us connect with the appointments that we had and take care of those veterans. But Devin and Pete went above and beyond. Not only did they spend, you know, about 6 days out helping us, we literally could not have done it without them. We would have looked at closing our doors because we only had one veteran service officer, and while that person was out, we didn't have somebody who could see our clients and get people connected to their benefits. Not only did Devin and Pete see clients, but they actually helped us. Your office has been established for years. They helped us with how to better do intake, how to do better record keeping, helping at our reception. It was really just incredible. And when I tried to offer any kind of reimbursement for that, they were like, nope, that's what we do. We're going to help you guys out. But we, at the county, we wanted to do something. So we understand that you guys have a foundation within your veteran service office, the John Reed Veterans Foundation. So Polk County would like to make a contribution for $1,200 to that foundation for you guys to use however you want to serve veterans. And I really do want to say to Devin and Pete, and I'm going to get up and shake their hands now because they were just awesome. Thank you guys very much. You guys deserve a round of applause. Thank you guys very much.
Like a quick photo before you do that.
Sure, absolutely. Somebody got a tie I can borrow real quick?
Jerry's coming up.
Hey, how you doing? I'm Brent.
Jerry Flora, nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you too.
Good morning, thank you.
All right. Jerry, a little bit closer to Devin.
Of course.
Okay, big smiles. Thank you very much.
You betcha.
So, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
So I'd like to mention some of the things that you may not know that's going on. We're trying to build a new office that is more elaborate and easier to access for veterans and given more services. Are you aware of that program?
A little bit, yeah. Devin clued me in on that.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of unusual for a county our size to take this on, but we've learned that our veterans are a business in themselves and a big asset for the economy of Lincoln County when you look at the amount, if you get them the services that they really were supposed to have. And so they taught us, and his predecessors taught us, the essential part this role plays in our county. And we're trying to do new and innovative ideas. And thank you for coming over and expressing your gratitude for your experience.
Well, we really do appreciate it, Commissioners, and I've worked with many other counties over the 10 years I've been in Polk County, and for you guys to step up with just a phone call and an email to say, absolutely, we'll send our staff over and help, it goes beyond words. We're very, very grateful.
Well, I think that's one of the things that makes all of us more effective is when we can work together, work collaboratively, and work for the common good. So I appreciate your comments. The other thing I'd add is that I think one of the highest forms of compliment is to get it from your peers. And so the fact that you made the journey here, I think Dallas is, what, about an hour and a half, roughly?
Depends on who's driving.
Well, my wife would say the same thing. Anyhow, for you to make the effort to come over here, and again, peer-to-peer to provide those kind of accolades, I think speaks highly to you and to the services that our employees provided. So thank you very much. And
thank you.
We certainly appreciate the financial contribution, too. So.
Absolutely.
Devin?
Yeah, if I could add one thing, I just wanted to let Commissioner and Brent know that 100% of the proceeds of this donation will go to immediate need veteran assistance program that we worked on developing. You know, getting the nonprofit off the ground took a little bit, and we've been chomping at the bit to find out how we can provide these, you know, kind of immediate things, the immediate need slush fund type assistance when veterans come in and they say, you know, I need somewhere, something to eat tonight, things like that when it happens. 100% of these funds will go to that immediate need assistance. So we wanted to make sure that was known to you guys. This is going back to our veterans and kind of kickstarting off the foundation's programs and assistance in a big way. We greatly appreciate it.
Well, knowing what I know about you, Devin, and you, Pete, I know you guys are probably going to leverage that into even double the amount, so it'll be put to good use.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Good to see you all.
Take care.
Safe drive back.
Peace drive.
Take care. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, next item on our agenda is adoption of the consent calendar. These are items of a routine nature or items that have come before us before. Is there anything staff or commissioner wish to highlight? Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion.
I would move that we approve the consent calendar as presented.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Okay, next item on our agenda is a public hearing. This is to consider the recommendation of the Lincoln County Planning Commission to approve a request to amend the comprehensive plan map designation of forest land to agricultural land and change the zoning designations from TC timber conservation to AC agricultural conservation under provisions of the Lincoln County Code for property owned by Don Kesey, map number 1208-23, lot 100. All right. Open the public hearing. Is there any commissioner that wishes to declare conflict, abstentions, or ex parte contacts?
Okay. That's new.
I also have none. This is the public hearing for case file number 02-LUPC-ZC-17 to consider the recommendation from the Lincoln County Planning Commission to approve a request by applicant Don Kesey to amend the comprehensive plan map designation of the map plan designation of forest land to agricultural land and change the zoning designation from TC timber conservation to AC agricultural conservation on property located at 3922 Mary's Peak Road and further identified on Lincoln County Assessor's map number 12-08-23 as lot 100. Applicant is Don Kesey, agent is Janai Kesey. There is no appeal of the Planning Commission's decision and recommendation on this request, but because this matter involves a comprehensive plan amendment, the Board of Commissioners is also required to hold a public hearing, which we are doing today. The hearing procedure will be described by Mr. Belmont. Mr. Belmont.
Commissioners, your first thing you'll do is receive the staff report from Hoyt Radomski, which will include the history of the application, the applicable criteria, and any other information. After that, we'll receive applicant's testimony and evidence, and we'd ask that you come in and sign at the desk up here and come forward and identify your name and address for the record. After that, we'll receive any opponent's testimony and evidence, and then receive the applicant's rebuttal testimony and evidence if it's needed. At that point, you'll close the hearing and begin the board deliberations and decision.
Okay. Staff report. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair Hunt. Good morning, Commissioners. Hoy Radomski, Senior Planner with the Planning Department. Here to present to you the staff report for this request for a zone change and a comprehensive plan change. As you mentioned, it's a request from zone for TC, Timber Conservation, to AC, Agricultural Conservation, and a plan change from forest to farm. And I will just mention two very important applicable criteria that's pertinent to this case. There's a few more others, but the two that I'm going to mention are basically kind of the defining ones. So the first is LCC 1.1235, which for zone change, there are three criteria that an applicant can apply for a zone change. The first is that the area has been changed substantially in use, that the current zoning no longer applies, or the original zoning. And second is that the zoning was previously applied in error. And the third is that there's a public need for the zone change. For this case, they are qualifying under the second one, which is zone in error. And you see on these exhibits that the left one is the zoning map, which shows that the subject property circle in red is basically surrounded by TC zone properties. But if you look at the map on the right, which shows the topography and the vegetation that's on the surrounding land, you see that subject property is basically is pasture and surrounded by a lot of timber. And the reason for that is because you will kind of see on the right, the map on the right, that there are vegetative buffers around what looks like three streams, and that's three streams. So basically what's going on is that the city property is lowland among a lot of hills, and so that's where the streams are collecting. And because the slope here is very flat, where all the water is channeled towards it and away from the property, that second criteria, that it's Lincoln County Code 1.1115 sub 5, the definition of agricultural land is that the soils have to be identified between class 1 through 4. Anything that's above that is for timber use. And so based on analysis of the soils for this property, 80% of the soils here are class 2 or 3, and only 20% are class 6, which is for timber. So based on soil analysis, that it was zone error, just because by definition of the agricultural land. And the second, I guess, argument for that was zone error is that the use history has been agricultural, I think, for the past 100 years or so. But the applicant will definitely testify further to that. And that's kind of the bulk of the argument here, that why this needs to be changed from TC to AC.
Questions from commissioners?
So why in the original map would they have not picked up on the soil classes?
When we had the Planning Commission meeting on February 26, Phil Spolnick, who was, present when they were doing this original zoning back in their late 70s and early 80s, he has said that for a lot of these things, they just kind of said, let's just make it all TC. They were kind of under a rush, understand, to come up with a zoning map. And if you look at a zoning map too, you'll see that the tan color is the agricultural zoning. And this property is actually quite a bit away from the tail end of that agricultural zoning. So that might be one reason why they just said, let's just make all that TC from this point on and not consider the underlying, you know, use and soils at that time.
So explain me in the second map, what I'm seeing, that was the original, that's the same, or is just, I'm not understanding the second map here.
Sure. Yes. So the second map is basically with the zoning layer removed. So this is what you would look at if you were in an airplane, you know, down. It would be a bunch of forests and with this property mostly in pasture. So this second map is to show that, well, number one, that it's mostly used for pasture, and historically it's been so. And the second thing I want to show is the stream corridors that exist on the subject property that kind of demonstrate that this is a lowland property and collects the water from the hills surrounding.
So the actual agricultural practices didn't change that much in there?
That's what I understand, but the applicant definitely speak more to that.
Okay. I was just trying to figure out what these maps, if you just look at them.
Yeah, the one, I think the one on the right is kind of an enlargement of the
yes,
red.
Yes, yes.
Okay, that's yes. The question I was having, because from here I can't see the lines.
Commissioner Thompson,
would you like to identify yourself?
Yeah, Ono Husing, Director of the Planning Department.
Thank you.
Here to assist my very able senior planner. What's hard to see this little in red
right,
here?
I see
that's
it
there, that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So that's the whole point, that this is, as Hui put it, this is an aerial photo, but this is really showing this
right.
piece right here.
Okay. So has the agricultural practices changed on that piece of property at all?
It's our understanding. It's been agriculture for 100 years.
Oh, okay.
It was clearly just an error,
which the criteria, as Hui pointed out so ably, it's either change in circumstances, yep. the public need, or just an error.
And the Planning Commission unanimously supported the request, correct?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
And there's been no appeal.
Correct.
Okay, then. I guess I have a philosophical question about planning. To me, you don't want to do what I'll call quilt zoning. You know, you zone one type of property here and then another one, and you have pieces all around.
Spot zoning is another.
Yeah. Is this an example of that?
I would say no, because by Lincoln County Code definition for agricultural land, it says that class between 1 to 4 is supposed to be classified as agricultural land. So by definition, this fits under agricultural land. And
because
not
the soil composition.
Correct, yes.
Okay. Commissioner Hunt, it is fascinating that you bring that up, because I wish I had a buck for every time somebody said, well, that's spot zoning, and we shouldn't do it.
So there's
another buck. So there's nothing in our code that prohibits so-called spot zoning, okay.
Zoning
by its very nature, it's a discriminatory process. It says you can do this here, and even right next door, you can't do it. And so, in effect, if they had done, and as Phil Spolnick said that night, it was amazing to have someone who's had all that experience currently on our Planning Commission, who was there at the dawn of time when this was produced, and he said, yeah, especially when we got to these. Because this is Harlan, you know, this is as close to Benton County as you're standing in at the Kessie's ranch. We visited the ranch, we've seen it firsthand a few years ago. Mary's Peak is just to the east, looming in the distance. It's a gorgeous spot, but it's at the very tail end of the county. And I think the point was, as Phil pointed, says, you know, when we got to those extreme edges, we tended to use a very broad brush. And so that's really what happened. Hui's made that point. All right.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
No, I think this is a no-brainer.
Yep. Seems pretty straightforward.
All right. Thank you to staff. And we'll now proceed to receive applicants' testimony and any evidence from the applicants. Welcome. And please identify yourselves for the record.
Good morning, Chairman and Commissioners. Thank you guys for allowing us to come in and testify today. My name is Janae Kessie. This is my dad, Don Kessie, owner and applicant. I'll be doing most of the speaking today, and my dad will fill in the details where needed. So the main purpose of us coming forward and addressing you today will be to give you a real rough idea of the history, property history, as it relates to agricultural use on the property. We were able to look back through a lot of legal documents that we have been able to accumulate over the years through relationships with past owners and other sources, and kind of piece together a bread trail of dates and examples of use dating all the way back to the late 1800s. So I'll try to move through it pretty quickly, and feel free to just stop me at any time and ask questions. So
thank you.
So beginning in 1891, there was a deed agreement between Oregon and California Railroad Company and Jonathan January. And in that, there was language that stated that January was to maintain a good and lawful substantial fence sufficient to turn livestock. So that indicated to us that he was running livestock on the property and needed to contain them. The second example moves us up to 1917, which was also a deed agreement between January and G.L. Ridenour. And this shows transfer of ownership between the two parties. Immediately after this property transfer, so the property now moved on to Ridenour. Ridenour applied for a water right on the property to divert water out of a portion, the most eastern stream flowing into this property, into that large eastern field you can see on the map up here. So then that takes us on up into 1950. And we see property transfer from an owner that purchased the property from Ridenour. So this was Dorothy Turner. And then she, in turn, sold the property and transferred it to Calvert E. Jones. In that deed transfer, there was language that stated that one hay fork, one cream separator, one blacksmith outfit, and all fencing material would be also transferred. So there was agriculture activity occurring during the time that she was there. Then that kind of brings us into the most intensive agricultural use period of time. So we moved kind of out of the homestead situation into a larger operation that was managed by Calvert E. Jones beginning in about 1950. And it's important to point out that Tax Lot 100 is actually a small part of what was originally managed by Calvert E. Jones in surrounding drainages. So this was probably less than 25% of the land area that he managed as pasture or cropland in that area. Has since been planted to timber in the bottom areas, all surrounding in these drainages here. In the 50s, Calvert E. Jones just continued to develop the entire area, especially this. This was one of the more productive portions of his holdings there. In 1964, our water right certificate, which we received from Calvert, shows that he requested a water rights for this entire parcel. So we can actually, we still irrigate annually, probably about 80% of these acres, all with the same water right that he originally had requested. So that's something we've maintained and continue to use. Let's see. I think the only other closing comment I would say is that even though Calvert E. Jones sold the property to a timber company in the, early 70s, continued a lease agreement on the property and continued to run cattle and sheep all the way up until my dad purchased the property from that timber company in the 80s. So there was actually never a lapse in agricultural use on Tax Lot 100. So it seamlessly transitioned from Calvert's use as pasture to my dad's use as pasture. So with that, do you guys have any questions?
No. Any questions from commissioners?
No, we're the smallest agricultural county in the state. We get a little more. Congratulations.
All right, any other information?
Farm gate agriculture.
Yeah. Any other information you'd like to present?
No, I think Janae's pretty well covered it. My earliest memories probably go back into the 60s, I know, late 50s and 60s. Boy, I remember lots of open acres in about two or three of those drainages that Janae referred to. They're extending not only in that one was probably the most southern one, but they lay to the north, and it went on downstream there a ways in relation to the aerial photo that you're looking at.
So. Did those get forested over?
Yes, they got forested over. In fact, I helped do some of it by preparing ground for Publisher's Paper to establish it.
And it's interesting, if you look at soil maps, you'll see the same pattern of productive agricultural soils under a lot of that planted bottom ground in there. So, I mean, that's their prerogative. They can do whatever they want with it if it's zoned TC. But it was originally productive pasture land or cropland. So.
Interesting. Yep. Yep. All right. Thank you. This will be an opportunity for any opponents to testify and present evidence.
You know, I'm just curious. Cindy George, and I actually attended this hearing, and so I don't really have too many oppositions, except that if you're changing it from agricultural, you're putting it into agricultural, we've got problems with biosolids being spread. So with all these tributaries and all these things, if you take it out of forest land, put it into agricultural, whatever they use on that land is going to be entering those waterways. So let's hope that they're not planning on biosolids being sprayed or anything like that with all that water supply.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to provide evidence in opposition or testimony in opposition? All right. Do the applicants wish to offer a rebuttal?
Sure. Do you want me to come back up there?
Please.
Okay. It's very easy. We do not spread biosolids, and we do not use any chemicals whatsoever, so no chemical fertilizer. We don't use herbicides. We use sheep, goats, bush hogs, cattle, and intensive grazing management to increase the productivity of our fields. So we spread a little bit of composted cow manure, but we only spread it during the dry time, so there's no leaching or runoff.
Okay. All right. With that, I will close the hearing. Public hearing is closed. Discussion, commissioners.
This seems very straightforward, seems to meet all the criteria. I would be in favor of moving it forward for an affirmative decision.
I agree.
Okay, as do I. So I need a motion.
I move that we... I move to approve the application for a comprehensive map amendment and zone change in case file number 02-LUPC-ZC-17 and direct staff to prepare the necessary ordinance with findings to implement this decision.
Second.
Any other discussion? Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 That motion carries. All right, we'll now move on to decision and action items. We have an order declaring the shoulder of Three Rock Road a no parking zone. I believe this came before us last week.
It did, Commissioners. You had a report from Public Works Director Roy Kenyon. You discussed what was requested around. This is an area around Knight Park in the northern part of the county. And the consensus was to move this forward to adopt an order which would establish a no parking zone and allow the Public Works Department to post signs in that area.
Okay. Pretty straightforward.
To me, this is a safety issue. It's a shame that there isn't a little better, wider right area because they need the parking space mm-hmm. there so bad. But if you let the boats get too wide in there, there's just no room for traffic to pass. It's not a good issue, so.
Plus, we asked about the widening there, and it was like $1.2 million for...
To acquire the right-of-way
and the grading.
So, it's prohibitive.
That cost cost-effective at all. So, all right. I'll entertain a motion.
I would move that we approve the proposed order declaring the shoulder of Three Rocks Road a no-parking zone.
It's sections of.
Sections of the shoulder. Yeah. As described in the order.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
That motion carries. Next item is a resolution initiating amendments to ordinance number 491, amending temporary regulations for recreational marijuana facilities. Director Husing.
Good morning again.
Good morning.
Anno Husing, Planning Director. It's already been quite some time, and Wayne can help me out with this, that in response to the development of the marijuana industry, Lincoln County stepped out and did time, place, and manner regulations consistent with state law. And we've promised the public that we would be, on a regular basis, revisiting our marijuana ordinances because, as we have seen in the past, especially the early stages of this, was a very herky-jerky. All of a sudden, we had to respond, and then the state came out with a new administrative rule, or then the legislature would react. And so we've had this sort of back and forth, trying to adjust our ordinances based on what were, for quite some period of time, a series of.
Now, would you please provide the speaker respect? When you're speaking, we'll respect you, so please respect the speaker. I understand you're unhappy, and I understand you have some differences. You'll have an opportunity to voice those.
I don't have to listen to it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as a result, we have made, we're all in an affirmative obligation to revisit these ordinances from time to time. What we have before you today, however, is the very beginning of a process, just to initiate the process. So if you use the metaphor of a baseball game as the first inning, what you're doing today, if you adopt this, is to ask the Planning Commission to, in a month or so from now, after we've provided a lot of public notice and developed a package of just housekeeping amendments. Now, I think this is an important thing for people that care about this particular industry to understand, is that we haven't, as we actually lived with the ordinances that we put into place every once in a while, we've done this once or twice in the past, we've encountered an unintended consequence where, again, just like earlier, there was a mistake in effect, or something was put into the ordinance that once we started living with the ordinance, and this happens frequently, we said, well, gosh, we never really meant for that to be an outcome of this ordinance. And so that happens frequently when you develop a new regulatory system, is that after the fact you discover, well, we never meant that. And so I would call all of that housekeeping amendments. So that's what we have before us today, is in particular we have one housekeeping amendment that relates to processing facilities in industrial zones. We had placed a, you can't be so many feet from this and so many feet from that. And what we had done for South Beach, we have a small industrial zone, that what we've actually changed that ordinance for dispensaries, but we did not do it for processing. And so what we have is, what we discovered when we were processing into conditional use was for an individual in the county to do a processing facility, that they couldn't do it there, and frankly we were just sort of like, oh yikes, we forgot for the processing to also remove that distance requirement. So that's really the heart of what we're doing today. This was an unintended consequence that would allow for this processing to be taking place within that industrial zone. So I think it's an improvement on the ordinance. I do want to take a minute though to really differentiate between what we have before us today, and this, again, this larger obligation to examine from time to time where we're at on these ordinances. So if you initiate this today, the instructions to the Planning Commission will be, please keep this confined to just housekeeping amendments. Now, what we do want to do, which I think is very, very important, is that it is time, and I know Wayne Belmont believes with this because I'm basically giving his spiel now, it's really time We've been living with these ordinances, and so have all these jurisdictions all over the state of Oregon. So we need to pool our collective experiences in the different counties and in the cities and say, what have we learned in the last couple of years? And do a more thorough review of and looking at some of the policy decisions, not just housekeeping, but in a separate process that we hope to do relatively soon, but doesn't tie up this housekeeping exercise. So I think there's going to be, and of course, even during the housekeeping exercise, people that care deeply about the marijuana industry who have insights to share are welcome to participate and pitch ideas. But I think in this round, I would say, let's just do the housekeeping for now. We'll continue to get feedback from the marijuana industry about more substantive policy changes later. And let's keep those larger substantive policy decisions for a second round of code amendments that would come maybe in the next few months, but gives us a time to review all of the ordinances from all over the state and really do a fundamental gut check on where we've been on our regulations. Wayne, do you think that's a fair accounting of where things stand?
Do you have a question, Commissioner?
So you said you want to do housekeeping, but you said you wanted to have meetings to bring in other counties and their experience. I understood that right? Because wouldn't that fall under the state would be the one if you're trying to standardize between counties, not necessarily our job.
Let me try to phrase it differently. Just like all 50 states in America are, in the law we always like to say that they're like laboratories, right? They're all experimenting. And all the 36 counties, well, some of them aren't because the east side sort of decided they were not going to do marijuana.
Answer the question.
We've got 25 counties that have wrestled with this difficult thing. And Commissioner Thompson, I want to cherry pick the best concepts from those other. I don't want to be consistent necessarily, just to be consistent. It's not a state law.
Let me ask the question again. If you're going to standardize between counties, wouldn't it be better handled at the state level than by the individual counties to come together?
Commissioner Thompson, I don't want to standardize. I want to take the crown jewel best ideas. I want to make our ordinances as fair and responsible as possible. And I want to cherry pick the best ideas from other places and do what's best for Lincoln County. And I'm glad you asked the question because I think it really explains what we're trying to do with this, not with what we're doing today, but with this next important piece that really I would invite people who have a lot of expertise in the marijuana industry to participate in that second process in particular.
Okay.
Thank you.
Another question.
That's a good question.
Well, I want a clarification. So really all we're doing is say, you're now authorized, you, the Planning Commission, are now authorized to start this process. There'll be opportunity for public testimony at that planning
with
process.
With a lot of public notice.
And then the Planning Commission will make a decision, and that decision will come back to the commissioners.
We'll make a recommendation for the code amendment to come back here. So,
Not a decision, but a recommendation.
Our colleagues in the marijuana industry and other people in Lincoln County are going to have several bites at this apple, even just during the housekeeping phase of this. We're going to have public notice about this upcoming. We have to notify the state we're doing this code amendment. Then there will be public notice for the Planning Commission, opportunity to participate in the Planning Commission, and an opportunity when the Planning Commission issues a recommendation for the public can participate again when it comes back to you as a recommendation.
And so there are really going to be two, just a second. Yeah. There are going to be two opportunities. Number one, the first one is simply to amend the ordinance with reference to this particular situation. Then there'll be an opportunity, a whole new process, to look at the ordinance in a more broad perspective.
Right, and to really address the larger policy. Right. So one is one's just right. Two
processes,
separate processes. One's housekeeping,
simple.
Real simple. Oops, we never meant that to begin with. The other one is a more substantive conversation about where we're at on our marijuana ordinances that, again, cherry picks the best ideas from our colleagues in other counties.
And you'll be coming back to the Board of Commissioners for authorization to initiate that more general process.
Of course, yes.
Just for the record. All right.
Thank you.
Commissioner.
I'm going to ask the question of Wayne, if it's okay with the chair.
Sure.
Wayne, you've been through this process before, and I know there's no way to tell, but the property owners are getting frustrated with the time frames that are there. Do we have any feeling at all how long it would take for the housekeeping process and for the bigger, more productive change? You've got the most experience.
The housekeeping, I defer more to the planning director, because they're the ones that initiate, you know, and deal with these things at the planning commission level. But it requires, you have to do a notification to the Department of Land Conservation Development when you make an ordinance change in your code. And that, 25 days, 30 days? 35 days, yeah. That's right. Give me the, so there's some notification processes there. Then you hold the public hearing in front of the planning commission with the proposed changes. They, you know, it depends on whether or not they move forward with those quickly, or they want to get the additional information. Because this is a legislative change, there is not a set, you know, procedure in terms of a time frame that there are with other quasi-judicial kinds of activities that actually have set time frames under law. So, I think that you've been saying 2 months to move this through, and I think that's probably for the housekeeping part of this, yes.
For the one particular applicant that has been patient, to say the least, I've said the end, I think we can do this by the end of the summer, the housekeeping part. I certainly don't want to make any commitment, because I think the other piece is a much more complicated, needs a lot more policy discussion and homework behind it for the second later substantive piece.
So the question is, since you get into something that's as complicated as that, do you break it up into sections, or do you try to deal with it all at one time for the bigger picture?
Well, what I can tell you is just the experience we've seen from other counties. So right now, Deschutes County is going through kind of a major examination of their time, place, manner restrictions. And that seems to be that they've kind of taken the what they've got, the whole thing, and are looking at the whole thing. Now they're taking chunks of it to propose changes, but it's a very lengthy process for them to examine the entire ordinance, all the policies behind it, the particulars in terms of their regulations and where they're going to go. And they're taking quite a bit of time to do that.
That's why I asked the question, because some of the regulations may not be exactly housekeeping, but they can be done. Changes can be done. And then there's these other really complicated ones. So if you don't break them up in sections, some people could be sitting another year to get the changes.
I think I'm about to agree with you that in this case we have a few things that were unintended consequences that people have been waiting on that really don't involve that you never meant when you voted for it to have that result. So they're really in a class by themselves, and this one individual has been very patient and waiting for us to do this. And there's a very good reason to cull those out, deal with them now, and then make sure that this very important conversation, because you know this is something other planning departments are doing around the state. They're right now there's a listserv where we're all asking each other to send each other our marijuana ordinances, because I think a lot of people in other counties have arrived at the same point of like, where are we at with this? We did this a few years ago. The dust has settled a little bit on this industry. Now let's share the best thinking, and because they're all, this is happening in a number of jurisdictions. They're sort of at the same crossroads. So I think it makes a lot of sense to pull this thing out, deal with this, and then have this more robust, thorough policy discussion with a second round of amendments in the relatively near future. I mean, we don't want this to go on for a couple of years either.
Okay. Any other questions? Anyone in the audience wish to comment?
You know what?
Please limit your comments to the marijuana initiating the process.
Cindy George, owner, past owner-operator of Going Green West. And so I find it really funny that you're in here, and once again, you're going to change the rules for one person when you went and you destroyed an entire facility that was helping the sick. But you want to change and make it feasible for one person to process, and I believe that there's dwellings around that area. I think that's why you're having to be concerned with it, is there's people living around what is potentially now going to be a processing center. But you're willing to change those rules just like you did with the state park when you it was illegal for the dispensary to be within the state park. Change that for Mr. Bledsoe in a heartbeat, didn't you? And now you got the same thing going on. The good old boy system in Lincoln County is still alive. Makes me sick I have to sit here and watch you guys.
Anyone else wish to comment? All right. I'll entertain a motion.
I move we approve the resolution initiating amendments to Ordinance 491, amending temporary regulations for recreational marijuana facilities.
I'll second with an understanding this is only the initiation of a process and a decision to be made for or against as the process moves forward.
All we'll be receiving is a recommendation. All right, it's moved and seconded. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 That motion carries. All right, we'll move on. Next item on our agenda would be commissioner reports.
Pass.
I'll pass.
I'll also pass. Constituent input. I believe we have some people in the audience that would like to comment. Who would like to go first?
There's a sign-up sheet there.
There's a sign-up sheet. There's somebody. Yeah.
Go ahead. And you may comment on anything you'd like to up to five minutes, please. I ask you to limit your comments to 5 minutes so that everyone has an equal opportunity.
Okay. Okay.
Good morning. My name is Maggie Molina, and I'm here to tell a story of how I jumped into the sewage where they're dumping sewage at river area. I stopped on my way to my grandma's house, and I thought it was a really pretty view. The trees were the sun was about to set, and I wanted to walk down and get a better view. And so I walked down this little path, and I thought there's one mud spot and another mud spot, and I thought if I jump from one spot to one spot, then I'll get closer to the water. And so I jump, and it was just the water, and I went head first into it. And before I noticed, it stunk a little bit, and I was just came up. I had mud all in behind my ear. I thought it was mud, and then mud on my neck. I had my hair stunk, and I just felt really gross. And then on my way to my grandma's still going, I had bugs falling out from all over. It was just really gross. And so I told my grandma and my aunt the story, and they told me that's where the sewage is dumped. And my hair still stunk. I showered. I washed it three times, and my hair was still smelling really bad. And when I was washing my hair, mud just kept coming out and out and out. And I just couldn't get the smell out of my hair for a couple days. And, yeah.
Okay. So, was there any posting at all in that area? Because I've never actually been to the site, and you've been experienced. Was there any signposting or anything?
No.
Is there any standards for this kind of procedure? Wayne, can we find out that information?
Yeah.
And whether you didn't see a sign in the neighborhood?
No. I didn't see any signs. It was just a turnout, and it was just a pretty view, and I just was walking down there.
Yeah. Added to the list of many.
So added to the list of questions.
You guys asked. I'm sorry, I didn't catch where you were exactly.
I was driving towards Blodgett and the back roads right through there. It was the beginning of the dirt road at Blodgett.
All right. Just so you know, we're accumulating a list for the information from your testimony.
Okay.
So when we get the state agencies here, we can ask them the questions that you would ask,
mm-hmm.
or the questions that you would ask and maximize the efficiency of the time when we get in here.
Okay.
It might be of interest to the audience. Maybe we can give a brief update now of where we're at and what we're trying to accomplish.
Well, we've gotten, the folks provided us with a great deal of information. I really appreciate that. And we want to encourage people to provide us more information on what's going on. We're examining the state laws and the administrative rules. I gave a preliminary analysis, and we're doing some more legal work in terms of our ability to basically regulate on top of what's being done by the state. I think the thing that was, I know for me, that was incredibly interesting in terms of the information that was provided is that while there may be current laws in place regulating biosolids, we're not seeing them being enforced. It sounds like the what's happening in reality is not conforming to what's required under law.
I know that, is it Kayleen, I think, that requested some information. I know you were looking for some additional information from one of the local cities. And we were trying to figure out who the contact person or persons were there and where that goes. And then we're also exploring with the producers of this waste, the cities, you know, what kind of records do they keep? What do they do? What are they doing on their end of the situation? How do they make their decisions? So we're kind of taking a broad view of all the players that are involved with this and how they're actually operating. And I think that what's been told to us pretty poignantly here is that there may not be, while it may be a quote-unquote regulated activity, it's not being, the regulations may not be enforced. So that's the one thing. We're gathering all that information and looking at that. Then we're looking at what we might be able to do on our end as a county to both ensure that there is enforcement occurring and possibly regulate beyond what's regulated in the state.
So Wayne, you're looking at this is a pretty lengthy area, if I understand, right? Because you've got federal and state regulations, and we're prohibited, we think, in a lot of areas from doing that. How are you doing it by yourself?
Well, you just, actually, I'm not doing it by myself. I've got some folks that are assisting me, you know, and looking at these particular issues. We're doing some research. I mean, this is an area that the legal concept is called preemption. That we're looking at, and as I said last week, very preliminary, and I have to do a lot more work on this because this is a very complicated legal concept. But preliminarily, because of some of the language on the Right to Farm Act that's in there, I'm not sure that we can out and out prohibit this particular activity, but I'm not also not convinced that we can't regulate it. And I think that you look at the spectrum of prohibiting on one end and can't do anything on the other. I think there's something that can be done in between, and that's what I'm looking at.
So Wayne and I have been through processes of dealing with the federal government and ocean management and all kinds of things where everybody assumed we couldn't do it, and then the efforts of the county, we were able to make major changes. Has anybody in the county ever challenged it the way you're approaching it?
No, and I did check around to see if there's anybody that's out there that's done any kind of local regulations, anyone in Oregon, at least under the Oregon statutory scheme the way it is, and I'm not finding anybody who has done that at this point or challenged it. So this is something new that we're looking into.
So is there any way that you can regulate it, but somewhere you have to make the agency be held responsible.
That's the accountability side of this.
That means that we either have to establish some kind of a violation code or a penalty, or otherwise they can just ignore us.
And that's what we're looking into. And the other part of this thing is that, you know, there's an opportunity here because, you know, all the generators of this waste are local people and they're local communities that are doing this. I mean, each one of them, I think it's we discovered that there are 10 processors in the county, and that includes our Crest as well as the cities that have these sewer treatment facilities. And they're the ones that ultimately make that decision to either, you know, how to deal with the biosolids that come out of here, whether or not to stockpile them, landfill them, apply them, apply those kinds of decisions. And I think this really begs for a conversation with those communities as to how they might do it. There's been some discussion about the possibility. I think it's Newport may be the only community that actually treats it to a level where they create what's called Class A biosolids. And at least under the regulations, Class A biosolids are something you could take off the back end and put in a sack or whatever and sell it as fertilizer, you know, that kind of stuff. But I'm no expert on the different treatment modalities, so we have to look at that a little bit further. But I think there was some discussion about the possibility as maybe a regional facility or regional treatment area that could actually do more treatment than's being done currently on some of these biosolids. So I think there's a whole variety of things that we need to look at. There's a lot of stakeholders and players that need to come into play. But back to the important thing here is I have not ruled out at this point that we can't regulate over the top of what's being done here to ensure that things are being done appropriately.
The other thing is we are working to, after we've gathered some information, we have a list of questions. We certainly want to get DEQ before us so we can hear what they have to say and get a better understanding of what they're doing or not doing.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Could I add a couple of things?
You may.
I've reached out to the Oregon Environmental Council, which is one of the largest environmental advocacy organizations in the state, just to ask the question, is this on their radar at all, or do they know of any other environmental groups who are looking at it? And their answer was no, but they certainly said that it does fit within their broader concerns and the concerns that a lot of organizations have over whether our river and stream protections are adequate and whether the laws and regulations we have in place are being adequately enforced. And also on the, I've had a chance to talk to a couple of more legislators, and on their suggestion I've reached out now to Senator Michael Denbrough, who has been investigating some activity on dairy lands that is, to put it mildly, not environmentally friendly, and they said he might be interested in the issue, so I sent him some of the information we got from citizens at the previous meeting. Have not heard back from him, but I'll follow up with him as well.
I have one comment to the speaker that just left the podium. I will ask that question specifically for you, because that's exactly the kind of information we need, where there's real life experiences that we can say, this is what happened. Why didn't you do certain things?
How was it able to happen? And again, I've been working with Representative Gomberg, and probably appropriate to get Senator Roland involved too. So thank you for your comments. Didn't mean to cut you off on your time. Anything else you wish to say?
Oh, no, I'm okay.
Okay,
thank you.
Anyone else wish to comment?
I just personally want to thank her for traveling from the Valley to come in today to testify amongst you, because it was very important what she had to say.
Yes. Yep. Yes. We agree.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Welcome.
How are you doing, commissioners?
Well.
I'm back again like a ball-headed hornet. Just wanted to give you a line.
Good to see
and
you.
And I
again.
Won't. Well, first of all.
Identify yourself.
My name's Alan Davis.
Thank you.
Timberland owner, farm owner, homeowner. First of all, Wayne Belmont, here's your Class A biosolids, how safe it is. It's not. You can look at that. Second of all, I was trying to find out who's responsible, you know, who everybody answered to. And it kind of comes down to the president first, then it goes down to the Department of Commerce, then it goes down to NOAA, then it goes down to the Oregon government, then it goes down to Department of Agriculture, EPA, DEQ, Fish and Wildlife, then it goes to local government, who's in charge of all these biosolids, right? Are you aware of the scope of county home rule? It's a 1973 law,
mm-hmm.
which you guys can make this illegal by taking a nay or yay vote right now today. Here's a copy in case you don't know about it. Okay, here's another one for you. Last week, I told you everything was in Newport's water, or Sletz's water. Arsenic, chloroform, copper, lead, selenium, zinc, ammonia, chloride. All of them have toxic problems to people. Yet none of our water has been, no notifications out that people are drinking it. Including little, children aren't even born yet. There should be notifications what's in our water. This is just wrong. Second of all, this is what really puzzled me. There's phosphate and phosphorus in this water. And I had to go back in chemistry. Thank you, Mr. Boyer, my biology teacher when I was in high school. And this cannot be water soluble. And I looked at several, scientific reports, chemists. The only way you can do this to make it water soluble, because it's in right here on the water treatment. This is from DEQ, by the way, too, Sletz. And the only way you can do that is you've got to add chemicals. Let me get this all out. And the University of Texas says these chemicals are because they mix this with lime to keep the smell down, right? So they mix it with carbon disulfide, dimethyl sulfite, and ammonia. Okay, right? They're toxic, very, very toxic. Here's, let me get all this right. Here's a copy of these if you need them. That's how toxic this is. What is all those? There's three of them. One of them is so toxic, it says right here, it's dimethyl disulfate, dangerous for the environment. Toxic to aquatic organisms, may cause long-term adverse effect in the aquatic environment. Avoid release to the environment. Toxic to your life with long-lasting effects. This is all being in this, you know, water, on this biosolids. This is all leaching in the Sluts River in time. We got all these poisons. So once you got all this mixed up, right, you got to raise the pH up to 7% to kill all your bacteria, right? So when you get that, you got to add up carbon dioxide to bring your pH back down. Well, what that does, it mixes up also with the biosolids. Well, there's a study in University of British Columbia that causes salmon to lose their flight, you know, to run from other fish so they get eaten. Also, they have proven to lose to where they came from, what river to return to. So you're messing with salmon, which, by the way, we all know it's a critical habitat area, Sluts River. So you're in violation of the 1973 Endangered and Threatened Act of the Salmon. So, you know, not to mention the Water Act, and, you know, there's just a lot of them. So what you need to do, I think, you need to post warnings at Owl Lake and Sluts River, because remember, Sluts River is pumped into Owl Lake. And all those little kids and everything are swimming in it, getting water in their mouth. And let me, you know, do I have to remind you what all is in that water again? It needs to be posted. People should have a right to make a decision whether they want to go in that water or not. And it's up to all of you guys, because you're our leaders. We look up to you. You know, you're supposed to lead us. You know, and you're not doing it. And you keep on wanting to postpone it. We've talked to DEQ, all those people, and they just keep it, give us the higher window, higher, you know, it's going nowhere. And, you know, under the ORS Health Department, for ORS 448151, the Health Department is legally has to check for the water quality from every water department and make sure it is water up to water quality standards for humans. Do you have you guys done that? Has the health department done that?
I get a report from the water quality from the city of Newport, yeah, of what all the chemicals that are in it, but that comes with my water bill once, yeah, a year, and then to break down beyond that, I don't get anything beyond their report.
And here's a list over, you know, they only check by, you know, because the EPA, and quit looking at the clock. I served my time in the military and I risked my life and lost 10 people. Don't do that to me. Anyway, arsenic, cadmium, copper, lead, mercury, molybdenum, nickel, selenium, and zinc are the only ones they check for. These are all the rest of, there's probably at least 200 more that's in our water that our EPA don't check for.
I ask that you respect the others and allow them equal time.
And one more thing, I've been in contact with other people.
Thank you.
They have contacted me, and they want to take a more radical act to this. I don't know what the radical act is, but they have contacted me. I told them don't do it, but, you know, you're poisoning people. So, you know, when you start taking people's lives, you're living in danger. You know, that's a dangerous thing. Like I said.
Thank you again for your service, sir.
I didn't mean to respect you. You disrespected me, but I'll always interrupt you. You need this for Class A.
Sure.
You can take copies of it.
Thanks.
Okay.
And for the record, that clock isn't working. That's why I have to look at that clock.
My name is Shereen Malik Rowland. Welcome. I've been a resident of Lincoln County. Thank you for listening to me. I have raised horses my entire life, and I've always bought hay. My family bought hay from a local farmer for 40-some years on the lower Siletz River. I bought hay from Jeff Mann back in probably the 80s, maybe 90s. I'm trying to figure it out now, getting older. And at first, I wasn't that concerned when my horses developed a cough, respiratory problem, and I contacted my local vet, Dr. Broad out in Lane County, and he had me soak my hay, and we ran some tests, and he said, your horse is getting irritated from something in the hay. Okay. So I started soaking the hay. Didn't seem to help. Ended up giving 2 or 3 tons to local farmers that had cows, because horses are more particular about eating hay than cows are. So you can feed second-year hay to cows where a horse will go, no thank you. So upon that, I quit buying hay from the same farmer that my dad had bought hay from for the last 40 years. I discovered he had been treating his fields chemically with sewage. That was several years ago. So upon that, I started getting hay from Jeff Mann on the Upper Siletz because I went to high school with Jeff Mann. And my horses continued to cough. I continued to soak my hay. And if you know anything about horses, they're not cheap to own. So I was like, this isn't cost effective for me. And I found out Jeff, too, was treating his fields with sewage. Upon that, it's been about, maybe 15 years now. We have gone and I've done more research and found out where I buy my hay from, how they treat their fields. People that aren't treating their fields with the bad stuff, I don't buy hay from. I no longer buy my hay in Lincoln County because there's not very many, as you pointed out, agriculture fields to buy 12 ton of hay a year, which is what I put up. And now I go to the valley and my horses no longer cough, and I'm no longer giving away 6 to 7 ton of hay a year because I can't get my horses to eat it. I ended up mid-season just stopping and going out to the valley and buying local grass hay and finding out how they treat it. So, and on closing, I grew up in Camp 12 on the Siletz River. So for 50-some years, I've lived on that river, and I've seen the eels disappear, I've seen the periwinkles disappear, and I've seen crap on the side because I also kayak it. And there has been a major difference, and I just really appeal to you gentlemen to let's step forward and look at, this isn't just about the next couple weeks, this is about the lives of your community forever. I mean, if the water goes away, we're all not going to make it. So please, I appeal to you, let's do what's right. And even if it rattles some feathers somewhere, so be it. Let's make a stand that matters. Okay? Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I got a comment about this because I've worked on the Oregon Salmon Plan, and it really is a clean waters bill. It's exactly what you're dealing with, we're talking about here, and I still am just in disbelief. I was spent a lot of time on this, but never had this kind of information come to me in that process. So thank you. I mean, I can't tell you what the results is, but these are the kinds of issues that I've been fighting since I originally was in the legislature, and I just have never had this information presented before me. So thank you.
Valuable information.
I'm going to try and be civil. This is Cindy George again. And I listened to you say that, Terry, but I also remember that I came to you many years ago, all of you guys, because of a young girl that was poisoned by a well, and nobody listened. And nobody cared. So it's really hard for me. All of these issues just bring up so much emotion for me. I took my little daughter to the hospital this weekend. She's clinically dehydrated. She's 8 months pregnant. They took her into the hospital in Newport, and she laid back. Her blood pressure was 60 over 20.
clinically dehydrated. She's drinking water constantly, bottled water. It's dead. I've been telling you guys this forever. The water that we're drinking is dead. I've had to buy my family bottled water for the last 10 years. Every drop has come out of a bottle. My mother was treated. My father was treated for dehydration. I've got kidney stones. I have suffered physically from lack of clean, safe drinking water. And don't ever say that you have not been told, because I've been screaming it from the rooftops. Now you say that you can't supersede state law. That's so funny to me, because you pick and choose when you supersede state law. You'll supersede state law when you want to go against the voters on the aerial ban, spray ban. You'll violate the... No problems. You're going to go, you know, cannabis law, state rules. You'll violate those rules, no problem. So it's all in when you pick and choose to follow those laws. Now, the health and well-being of your citizens and all these people seem pretty important. So, as a county, if you're willing to change all these other rules, okay, this issue needs to be on the forefront, this water. Because Salem, here I wake up, my grandbabies are over there right now and they got no water. They can't even boil it and be safe. Do you understand that? Do you understand as a parent what that does for generations to watch your family affected by no clean water? And you've ignored it. And it breaks my heart. You guys just don't know. All this is mental health. It's because when people come to you and they're in pain, there was no help for anybody.
I gotta go, guys.
Anyone else wish to testify?
So, Vegas, what I said that I had heard of the biosolids issue, and I've dealt with all the rest of the issues. It's ironic, I saw the same article in the Salem paper today.
Yeah.
And when I was in the legislature, one of the first big bills I dealt with was a mine that wanted to be built up there. And it was my vote that kept them from building that mine, because it was going to use leach pools with mercury to separate. And I know that that was the Salem water supply. And it was a one vote margin on that one. So believe me, I've been dealing with this for a long time. Fish women.
Well, good morning. My name is Sue Molina, and thank you for serving us. I am Mayu Molina's grandmother. I journeyed out to where she was enticed into this beautiful day, this lake, and it was not a field where this sludge was poured. It was the lake it was dumped into the lake. So. It was not a fertilizer put on a field. It was, I don't know, maybe they're extra that they didn't know what to do with it, so they just dumped it into the lake, not knowing that something would transpire. I have no proof of that, but I went down there. There's a pathway that goes to the lake. I smelled her when she came out. It was not mud, but she explained. It was not mud that was on her. So, I have no proof that they're putting this into the lake, but I can see. I've traveled. I do lots of lake swimming, and I went down to that lake. And you, when you go to a lake, you might sink into mud, but you don't go into it over your head. So I don't know what they're doing there. I also saw there were signs of they're going to spray the side of the road with chemicals. So good. They posted that. They did not post that they put sewage into this lake. So I think we need to look at it now. I don't know what health issues she's going to have, but she's a star athlete that plays on the OSU team. If she has any consequences from this, you'll be hearing from me again.
So can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Do you remember the location, or you can give me later?
She has pictures of it.
The location, the month, and the time.
Oh. I will give that to you.
Yeah.
Great.
So
yeah.
If you just send.
And it was the same time because I was running along the Logsdon Road, and the two sludge trucks that passed me were doing way over the speed limit, hauling buns out to that area. So I will get you the dates and the times.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm not sure if you wanted to see pictures of the area.
Certainly.
That'd be great if we could get copies of those.
Yeah, can you forward those to us?
Yeah, I can do that.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Welcome.
Hi. Kayleen Davis, farmer, landowner. Mom, grandma, gonna be a great grandma. So I'm very concerned. Thank you. And guess where my granddaughter's living right now? In Sillette's. Yeah. Nice. So I'll try to make this quick. I can start my time. I don't want to rehash everything, but the Mid-Coast Basin team, right? There's the shareholders, all the things. They're having a planning work group tonight. Are you guys going?
We have a budget hearing.
No, that's too bad, because they're doing a lot of planning.
Schedule.
Yeah, but everybody that has concerns about their water, they want to hear from us.
Who is that?
The Mid-Coast Basin, stakeholders, shareholders, the committee. There's several different ones.
They usually have topics on different issues.
Yeah, and they're doing different work groups, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Working on the streams. David Waltz is going to be there. I talked to him from the DEQ. You know, it's quite curious because talking to him, and I was asking him, and I'd filed a complaint with Paul Kennedy, and he said, well, your complaint is gone, done. He said, well, you know, that's funny. I complained about the biosolids on the road, and I asked for a callback, and I didn't get one. And he said, well, he went and he looked, and, well, I had a lot of correspondence going with Paul Kennedy and asked him a lot of questions. Well, he came back the next day. On the day, he said he answered my complaint. He sent me an answer about Howard Weizkiver's field and that he didn't know what was going to be placed on it this year. That had nothing to do with my complaint. That's just a piece of information of how the communication goes there. So on the Mid-Coast Basin, they started back in the early 2000s, correct? And in monitoring phase 1 and 2, 2008 through 2010, steady conclusion, Sillette's River is in extreme danger. Then we go a few more years, and not a whole lot happens. And then in 2015, Coastal Nonpoint Pollution Control Problem docket. Oregon failed. The coast failed. And they cite a lot of reasons, the Endangered Species Act. But in 2015, we failed. And where have we come since then? I don't see it. We're still spreading. They're still doing tests. The tests in the 2018 report of the TMDL's Local Stakeholder Advisory Committee, that's a different name, that's a new one. They're meeting now. They say that the supporting chemistry monitoring by the DEQ and local partners in the Salmon Sillette's River was done in fall in 2007, summer and fall 2017, but that's not available on the database, DEQ database yet. But yet their planning is to continue monitoring schedule for the Sillettes for the winter spring for 2017-18. In the meantime, here's a visual. These trucks are still spitting this waste. There's still millions of gallons coming. And guess who's looking now? Newport. I talked to Andrew Grant yesterday. They're class A biosolids. Well, guess what? They're a liquid too. They're not a solid. They can be dried to a solid, I believe, but I don't know that much about it. This is not my expertise by any means. But in the meantime, they keep coming, and they keep postponing, and lots of money has been sent in grants. I mean, all these years they've been working grants. They're evolving grants, and they just keep happening and happening, but we're not getting anywhere. So after talking with him, and I asked Andrew Grant if they would go somewhere else, look somewhere else, and he said no, and they're going to continue looking here. DEQ is also looking now to our timber. Forest lands. They're going to go talk to small timber lot acres. So we're going to go a little higher and pollute a little further down the waterway. What about the wildlife? What about the creatures? I mean, there are so many ways for it to get there. It's just not okay. I tried to talk to David Waltz about that, too, because that's who it says to call. But when you call him, he'll tell you to talk to Paul Kennedy. I find that quite curious. And then we've got Depot Bay, who sent us 500,000 gallons recently. And I don't know if anybody read John Sullivan's or Dave Wilson's letter to the editor, but this is the uncondensed version. Where Brady, he brags about their river, their water. Yeah, the Waukee Creek's crystal clear. Why the Celeste has got algae growing? Well, guess why? Because it's slow moving? No, because you're sending all your biosolids through sewage down there and dumping it in, and it's in the river. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's proven. It's there. So my stand, our stand, is that, researching this, I want to give notice to the Lincoln County Commission so that given the proven facts that the current application and of the treated sewage biosolids from the municipalities, my tongue is twisted, under the direct jurisdiction, have contaminated the Celeste River, and they continue to do so. And they are presenting an immediate and ongoing health hazard to people in Lincoln County. We had a little girl jump in, a young lady jump in it. We strongly encourage you to use your power under the Oregon Revised Statutes 2007 Water System, generally 448.115, definitions for the ORS 448.115 to 448.285. Remedy when system of health hazard. Whenever a water system or part thereof presents or threatens to the present of public health hazard, required immediate action to protect the public health, safety, and welfare. The Director of Human Services, is that for the county or the commissioner, can stop it. That's my understanding of it. I was just hoping, I wanted to give this to you, if you don't want, to see if you guys, and we're asking you now to do immediate order injunction to each and every municipality and any individual identity spreading around these treated sewage biosolids on or around the Celeste River or its watershed. And I attached a copy of that for you. Oh, I need you this copy too.
I'll make a comment. Okay. This county has taken on a lot of huge issues, and this is another one that we're going to take on, I believe, or at least explore. One of the reasons that the county has been effective in these kinds of cases, and of all these kinds of cases, we do our due diligence. We go after the information. We get it, and our lawyer team is excellent, and you only get one shot at this. And so if you're shooting at something as big as this, you've got to make sure you have every detail ready. And so it takes time, because when we get a shot at it, we want to make sure we hit the target and hit it right so that it's for the best of the people of Lincoln County. Don't push us too quick. It takes time to do this process.
The river doesn't have time, Terry. I have one other question as far as DEQ. And, the county, I guess maybe the county should be responsible. Who's gone down the river to make sure there's been no erosion? Made sure that none of these banks have gone away, where these biosolids are being placed? Because then that's a direct alley into the river.
If there's any of that, to get some evidence, give me some pictures. That's exactly the kind of stuff we need.
More evidence.
Stronger
case will be able to make.
You guys live up there. You know the areas. Get us the evidence.
Well, I think you can stop it, and we're asking
that you
do.
Well, I think we have got a shot at maybe not stopping it, but correcting the errors, and we're gonna give it a shot and see what we do. And I apologize. I think I've got the meeting in Walport tonight. If that's tonight.
No, actually here. Oh, here. We're in Walport in a week.
Okay. Well, on the day or tonight. I think there's a conflict, but I plan on going to that meeting of the Watershed Council, because not over this issue, but just because I'm concerned over freshwater mussels.
So Terry, what are you concerned about?
Well, I'm concerned about anything that lives in our rivers.
Right, but you said the freshwater mussels.
Right.
Because I was going to talk about that, but go ahead.
Tell me what you know.
So that's in Walport?
Right now you're Selena.
Oh, I'm Selene Rolatis. Yeah. I'm sorry.
For the record.
For that young woman that was here, how does she send you those pictures? How do we get that information
just
to her?
Pick a card out there, just send it to me, or send it to the county commission office and send it to me.
Because she kind of left, and her grandma's still here.
The
county webpage has a contact address.
All right,
you could send
good.
There, or any of the commissioners.
Oh, good. Yeah. All right, that's awesome. Well, I had a family gathering this past weekend, and our elders spoke about the clean water mussels and all that they do to help clean our water, you know, and how long have they been gone out of the Sluts River. So when you mentioned that, I made sure I wrote it on my little notes that I want to talk to you all about. But you think about how they clean the water and how long have they been gone out of the Sluts River. You know, you say we have one chance at this, you know, Terry. I have to stop and think about just the history in my DNA, you know. We're at that point. It's like when you talk about the processes, everything takes so much time. And Kayleen says, we don't have time. We really don't have time. And I know you guys understand that. And you're building your case, and these farmers here, everybody that's in here came from Sluts or have lived on the Sluts. There's people here that didn't introduce themselves. I unfortunately live by GP Mill. And so, but my heart is with the Sluts. I don't know. When I listened to the hearing last week, they talked about the flood zone. That's the important time. To count your 200 feet, you go from that flood zone. You don't just take 50 feet, 200 feet from where the river is today. You go from when the flood zone. You understand where I'm going with that? That's really a vital piece. You know, and then I'm really glad those farmers that came today don't do biosolids. I'm really glad for Shireen Malik that came today. I've heard her story since I've been listening and being part of this dialogue. But I wanted to point out to you, the Sluts tribe did an eel survey years ago with OSU. That's an important document to help with your case, that you're going to go to be able to stop this or find the solution. There are solutions. Cindy George brought up solutions. Newport Treatment Center has some solutions. You know, I don't understand how you all can't band together, like call an important meeting together of minds to get this to stop, you know? I don't understand how it all works out, but when I think about, we're talking about thriving and surviving, I think about my culture. When our people were brought here, we didn't have a choice. We didn't have a choice. We either hopped on the ship or we got killed, you know? So we did the next important thing. We tried to save our families. And now we're here trying to save our river. Mind you, there are no Sluts Indians alive today. But I hope you all read John Sullivan and Dave Wilson's letter in the paper. His last paragraph was, there are other issues causing problems with the health of the Sluts River, but the spreading of the biosolids is one that we can do something about. For decades, the Sluts River has been the lifeblood for Native Americans in the area, local residents and communities, and the fishery. The health of the Sluts River should be a top priority before it's too late. You know, he says it all right there in that bottom paragraph. It's too late. We are too late. And I feel like you have the authority, the stewards of our county, to stop it. And then, what else was I going to say? Well, I just appreciate people taking time off of their jobs to come here to testify. That young girl that's an OSU, an awesome athlete. When I heard that story at our veteran ceremony, I thought, yeah, you guys need to hear this story. I mean, how would you like it to happen to you? You go dive in the lake and you smell like shrub. You know that poor girl? And she's a great young lady, by the way. So I think I'm rambling now because I just want you guys to hurry up and stop this. We can stop this.
Yes,
you know, it can be terminated. You know, you're looking at a terminated Indian woman. I grew up saying I was terminated. I am an Indian woman, whether the government says it or not. So I'm asking you to terminate these trucks, please, for our children. I think that is all.
Mr. Chair, could I say something?
Sure.
Yeah. I really appreciate the passion, the effort, the time that all these folks have put into this, and specifically to something that Mr. Davis brought up, I believe, the Oregon Home Rule Law of 1973, which basically says counties can legislate on any matter of county concern. I'm familiar with that law, but unfortunately, the legal presumption that state authority overrides local authority, federal authority overrides state authority also comes into play. I mean, just one real life example of where that came into play. 2004, do you remember Multnomah County? At the time, it was still Oregon state law, and then there had been no federal precedent otherwise that marriage was between a man and a woman. But the Multnomah County Commissioners decided that wasn't right. They told their county clerk, start issuing licenses to same-sex couples, but that was challenged in court and thrown out 30 days later. I'd hate to see us do some kind of an ordinance that wouldn't stand up in court, and it was on the preemption issue. Now, eventually, state law changed, and then the Supreme Court ruled, and it became national law, but I'm with Commissioner Thompson. I think we only get one chance to deal with this, and I want to do something when we do it that we know is going to stand up over the long term.
But in the meantime, the biosolids continue to flow. Millions of gallons will continue to be dumped.
We know. We understand.
It's 30 days.
What? I mean, DEQ and everybody said it's all safe and everything, right? How come they just don't get a glass of water and drink it in front of all of us and say, this is how safe it is?
That's
then
a question.
We'll believe them.
That's a question I'd like to ask them.
Yeah.
And I really, this is imminent and immense danger to the public right now. It is a hazard.
We understand that.
So I just don't understand how, or maybe you can approach the state.
We are. We've talked to several legislators.
Right.
Yeah.
So are we going to post the lake? Are you going to post the Sledge River?
Is there anyone else that would like to comment?
I want to make a comment.
Okay, then. Yeah, I'll let Commissioner Thompson comment.
Back in when I was in the Oregon legislature, the Oregon Salmon Plan was created and created watershed councils to work on exactly this issue of trying to improve the water quality in all the rivers of the state. One of the things you can do is be involved with your watershed council and for your particular river that you're involved in. But there's a problem in all kinds of different rivers and all kinds of different problems around the state, but at least you're at a local level. And we have the watershed council right over here, and I'm sure that they're happy to have more citizens involvement. They've done a lot of things that have improved things, like changing the logging practices and moving buffers and things like that. This is another thing we can do, but that's on the local level that's easy to get to make the changes. And that was designed to work on exactly these kinds of issues. I'm not sure exactly why. Well, we just need to get to we need more information from them, too.
So you're all right giving this water to children and future generations?
We haven't said that.
Well, you should put some kind of health warning out there, either in a public notice in the paper or posted on the Law Lake or in the Sledge. You know, you're ignoring it. You're saying, no, we haven't water.
No,
we
don't want to waste the water. Okay, one at a time, please.
I'm just asking, you should put some kind of health, you know, it should be publicized. People should have a right to choose whether they want to drink the water or not.
Okay, I'd like to say a couple of things. Okay. Number one, I'm confident that when I speak, I'm speaking for the three commissioners. We are not ignoring this problem. The fact is that we're trying to gather as much data, as much evidence, so that when we address it with the regulators, we're in a position to be effective. That doesn't mean that we don't think it's serious. It doesn't mean that we wouldn't like to change it immediately. And I can assure you that if we could change it immediately, we would. But we're trying to gather information and go through a process that, unfortunately, we have to go through. And We're not ignoring it. We recognize it's terribly serious. We've spent a considerable amount of time working with legislators, working with our attorney, trying to gather information so that we can address it. And we are addressing it. We will address it. But I understand it's not fast enough. I wish it could be faster. And we're committed to doing it as quickly and as effectively as we can.
So keep drinking the water.
Sir, can't you put a temporary ban on it until this thing comes to boil?
My understanding is we're legally preempted from being able to do that. We're researching it to try to determine that. I understand you may have information that indicates you feel differently. We're trying to sort it out.
Because we fast-track it.
Yeah.
Well, we are fast-tracking it. We've got that man right there doing it.
For years now.
But in short, what our attorney has told us is that under the state's Right to Farm Act, it was written into the Right to Farm Act that using biosolids for fertilizer is something the state has outright permitted, and that a local authority
like it?
Can.
No.
No.
But it's a public health issue, and that should override any Farm Act.
But the people that might be able to help you, I know the meeting tonight, you have the budget committee, but their work groups, I believe, start at 4, and there's several in there. I know, I'll put your name, Penelope
Kesmerick, we know.
Yes.
Sure.
She's going to be there. She's working on some of the streams. I've been in some contact with her. And like I said, David Waltz is going to be there for the... I invited him here, but he didn't want to come. But he'll be there. So there'll be some people there that have some information that maybe could help you. I know you three maybe couldn't all go, but maybe Wayne could go, or maybe one. But gather a little more information faster. The DEQ has it, but they don't have it on their database, so you can send it out there. It's there.
Well, and again, I think one of the issues is there are regulations. It's pretty apparent they're not being complied with.
Yeah.
And how do we go about making sure that they're either complied with or those practices are stopped?
Yeah.
That's what we're committed to trying to address. I wish it was faster. I understand your frustration.
So you're not going to give a public health notice, yes or no answer?
I don't know if we legally can. That's the most honest answer I can give you.
Okay, so Dwayne Balmont's the legal counsel for the county, right?
Correct.
Do you know if you legally post a warning to people that you possibly drink toxic water and protect your children and children that are not even born yet? You cannot do that, even though it's set by DEQ to the Department of Sludge Water Director that all these toxins are in that water, and you can't legally post a health warning?
Again, is that one of the regulated, and that's part of the issue here, is I think you're raising some really good questions and from what you raised here in terms of what is it they are testing for, number one, what is it they're actually regulating, what are the standards for those. At this point, you know, it may be that they're not violating any of the existing standards out there, which is why when you would post it, it violates the existing standards. You're raising the issue of the fact that they may not be testing for the right things. They may not be actually identifying those kinds of things. That's where you get into, you know, the authority to post, and it actually rests with the state to post that. The thing you gave me rests with the state. The Human Services Director is the state director that does that, post that kind of thing. So, you know, again, we're going to look into all these things. And again, I really do appreciate it. I do have one suggestion. That just listening to that, and again, it's not something that's a legal thing, but I would suggest that maybe we craft an order, craft a letter that we request right now each of the entities out there that are engaged in land application halt while we review this particular matter.
Yeah.
That's what
I would
use
sign
your good
on
office
to that.
To do.
Yeah.
So.
We can request it, but again, it doesn't mean they'll do anything.
But that's a simple, easy thing we can go today. We can get that out today and go to the cities and
but
say.
But can you also say this is a water quality issue and toxins are in the little boost that, you know, there's only a 50% chance most of that gets out of the
Well, I think they, you know.
Can I talk to you about your letter? Maybe
sure.
Just a few things we can address.
Sure, we can talk afterwards. But I think that's something where you can use the office that you have here and your relationship to say, while we're working on this particular issue, let's halt temporarily
and
application.
I think the letter would have a lot more impact if you would share the same information you've shared with us with the cities.
go directly to the cities.
Well, I talked to everybody. In fact, Andrew was waiting for my call.
I wouldn't give up.
Have you gone to their meetings and used their public comment?
We've RSP'd for the meeting tonight, and I'm still waiting. I don't know how to get a hold of the Internet Press.
We're still trying to figure that out.
We don't know that either.
I have tried and tried, and the number I finally got, I got to their system, and I got to listen to their system to hear that it was running, I guess.
We talked to Michael Adams again. All the city councils have time for public comment, constituent
at
comment.
At their council at meetings, their like Depot Bay and Newport.
I mean, you've been effective Celeste. Here. I think you'd be effective there, and I think that would make our letter even more meaningful to those city councils.
So I want to mention one thing. I have to go look at my calendar, but if I don't make it to the Watershed Council, it's not because I don't care. I think I had like four meetings that night, and one of them is one that I have to be at, and all the commissioners. I do most of the natural resources. They do their own expertise, but you'd be amazed how many night meetings and stuff we have.
I
apologize if I'm not there, because I don't care. Like I say, I went to the last meeting. It's just... you get these conflicts, and you have to go to the one that's...
If Commissioner Thompson isn't able to be there, one of the other of us might be able.
Well,
I don't know the date.
I think it's tonight.
Is it tonight?
Yeah,
we can't be.
We can't be
because of the budget meeting. Yeah.
I'm going to the Watershed Council meeting to the dinner tomorrow. That's tomorrow. That's not...
It's
not the Watershed Council. It's the regional watershed.
This is the meeting. This is the Mid-Coast Planning
Group. Mid-Coast Planning Group, right.
I thought you were part of that partnership. I'm sorry.
I haven't been part of that. But we'll make sure we're covered. If we can figure out somebody.
Yeah. Help send planning director if one of us can't be there.
All right. I know it's a poor second choice.
All right. Any other constituent input? All right. Thank you all.
Actually, one more.
Yes.
When they're not complying to the rules, and I asked you guys this again last week, but I'm going to ask again because they don't come up. I filed the complaint. Paul Kennedy, his answer was he'd been here prior to my filing of the complaint of the biosolids on the road. So biosolids are on the road, the people, you know, people can be walking through there, but they're not going to do anything.
Yep.
Who do we call? Hazmat? Who do I call to come clean up this mess? Not me. The city won't come do it.
It's right next to Moonshine Park.
I don't know.
When you get pictures of that, would you send them to
me? We have pictures.
The pictures are on the Facebook page, the Save Our Silhouettes page.
We can try to find it. We will find out.
Well, if it's on the road, it very probably Department of Transportation would want to know if there's
any
of that thing.
It's a county road.
It's a county road, Jerry, so I don't know if that's still Department.
Is it on the county road?
Yeah, right in front of Moonshine Park.
Then which us...
My discussion will be with the city of Depot Bay, who I think ultimately has responsibility.
They ultimately have to stop it. Yeah. The ultimate responsibility for
their
immediate danger is what I want to know. Who's responsible for that? I mean, Brady needs to come and clean it up or Michael Adams.
Because you have kids walking back and forth.
And animals.
Yep.
Okay.
So it's a bike path, block path.
Okay.
We'll find out or do our best to find out.
Yep.
It can take a while. Yes, Sonia.
One last comment.
Sure.
So many of my friends live in Salem, and they got that alert, and they didn't know if they should take off to the field or what the alert was about. Mm-hmm. So when we get to that point here and our water's too poisonous to drink, who's responsible to send the alert out to the Lincoln County residents? You know? I mean, they can't even boil that water. They can't use that water on their pets in Salem, Lebanon, Turner. You all heard about that, right?
I haven't heard. Yeah. That went out last night.
I just saw the front page.
I wasn't even home last night.
It was sent out through EAS. From City of Salem.
It was their city water was toxic and they couldn't drink it.
Generated by the city.
Yeah.
Because again, the county doesn't provide water or sewage services, so
we don't do that.
So when our water's like that and we have that emergency broadcast, who's responsible in our county to send us the alerts on our cell phones, our emails? That's my question.
Like if it was Newport water that tested at dangerous levels, it would be City of Newport that would have to send that notice, just as an example.
Yeah, because it was just like all over Facebook last night. Yeah. It's terrible.
Any other comments?
maybe in a letter to Brady, when this less water is poisoned, we can use his crystal clear water out of Rocky Creek.
That he brags about while it toxifies our valley.
Yep. Okay. All right. We're going to move on.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
We have no executive session. There is a final fourth county budget meeting tonight at 6 p.m. here in this room. The next board meeting of the Board of Commissioners is a joint work session with the City of Walport. That's on Wednesday, June 6th in the Walport City Hall. And immediately following the joint work session will be a meeting of the Board of Commissioners also at the City Hall on Wednesday, June 6th. And with that, we're adjourned.